the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 376, and I'm your host, Adam Mangum. Before there was Jimmer, there was Danny Ainge. Matt and I discuss the 1980-81 men's basketball season and why it's one of the best seasons in BYU sports history. Also on the show, Jimmer goes to Greece, the age of the athletic QB at BYU, and Rise and Shout Karaoke. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Check out this podcast at iTunes and subscribe there or wherever you get podcasts and listen to Matt and I talk right now. Matt, do you watch Stranger Things?
I do watch Stranger Things, but I have not watched any of the new seasons, so let's not, no spoilers, please.
They killed
no
Han Solo.
Not again. Why does everybody keep killing Han Solo?
Keep killing him. I have one episode left. I've watched 7 of the 8 episodes, so no spoilers. Jeremy and I talked about it a little bit last week, and also said nothing except he watched it. Did you listen?
Of course.
Oh, that's a no.
I was on vacation.
Yeah, a great time to listen to the Rise and Shout podcast is when you're on vacation. It's like the best time, especially with family around. Gather the family around. Press play on the old iPhone and connect it to a Bluetooth speaker and let
the old podcast
share.
Machine.
Yeah, the old podcast machine, just like they used to in the old days.
And when they did analog podcasts.
Yeah, analog podcasts. Before all this digital crap, it ruined everything.
Right, of course.
So anyway, but I think this is a good time for you to do a brag. And by the way, I was listening to the Freakonomics podcast, and there was an economist who said, and tell me if you think this is true, people prefer actual bragging to humble brags. Like humble brags really annoy people and actual brags only kind of annoy people. Is that true for you?
Oh, absolutely true for me.
Yeah. The humble brag thing to me is, you know.
Like, yeah, I prefer to just brag outright.
I can't believe he referenced the economist referenced tweets, and he said one of his favorite is, I can't believe they're still hitting on me when I'm wearing my sweatpants and no makeup. He loved that one. He thought that one was great. But a brag on you. I'll make the brag. You saw Spider-Man Far From Home before I have. I haven't seen it yet. We were on vacation.
Oh, I've seen it.
And you've seen it.
I went last night. I went on a weeknight.
I hear Han Solo got killed in that one too. I mean, stop.
I took three of my kids and a nephew, and we went last night.
That's fantastic.
It was a lot of fun.
I'll hopefully see that this weekend. But Matt, enough about entertainment. Enough about Hollywood. Let's do the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, according to multiple media reports, the American Athletic Conference has no plans to add another team. But wait! They might if ESPN, according to the Salt Lake Tribune and other multiple media reports, if ESPN exercises their right to cut the revenue based on the number of teams remaining in the conference. So, Matt, is the American Athletic Conference going to add another team in the short term?
So, do you know what it sounds like to me, like if you think about just like the rumblings to this, I look at a couple of things.
Okay.
There was some level of expectation that at BYU Media Days, BYU was going to have a contract to talk about with ESPN.
Yes.
And they did not.
Yes, that is correct.
I think it's likely, I know this announcement wasn't made until after BYU Media Days, but I think it's possible that the conference and that ESPN knew that UConn was on their way out.
I think that's very possible.
And then, you know, you've had all of this working in the background. I think ESPN may prefer to have BYU in a conference. And if that is true, they're going to do whatever they can to influence both parties to come together. So if ESPN wants this to happen, I believe it becomes an inevitability.
So you know what?
They do something like this with the contract with the AAC. They do something with their contract with BYU to try and make it beneficial for everybody. for the two groups to get together.
Well, this works easy. This works easy this way, okay? The way this works is if the AAC gets more money for adding BYU as a football-only member, okay, ESPN grows the pie for the conference because then everybody benefits, and then they give BYU some sweetheart deal, not from a conference perspective, but all of their non-conference games, ESPN pays X dollars, right, for these other games. I think the scenario you paint is good. My favorite is how that Oresco, the commissioner of the conference, I think that's Oresco, right? Am I getting his name right?
I don't know how to pronounce it, but sure.
So he has repeatedly said that BYU has not reached out to him. And I love how the reporters are taking that on face value. As a marketer, I can think of 8 different ways that that statement is true and that he's still talked to BYU about it.
Because he always says it the same way.
He says it the exact same way. BYU has not contacted us since then. But have they contacted BYU? Have they negotiated, like you're talking about, through ESPN?
That's how this is working out, dude. TV rules. That's where the money's coming from.
That's where all the money
comes
from.
And the money is what is going to dictate what happens here. This is all going to be about money.
Yeah. And again, like I said, if the American Athletic Conference can add 1 to 3 more teams and grow the total pie, they will do it because people are greedy and want more money. BYU will do it if they total pie grows and or they really believe that the P5 is never going to happen, which you and I believe is, I don't know, 100% certain that it won't ever happen, but high probability, right, that BYU right. never joins a Power 5, because I don't think there's even going to be a Power 5. I think there may only be a Power 4 when all the dust settles from the next TV contract. Anyway, nothing. News without news, really. Matt, it's not news, but it fit kind of in here, so I put our first tweet bag question of the day.
Tweet bag.
This comes from Zachary Thornton. That's at Coronado Zach on Twitter, and you can tweet at us at BYU_RiseShout. Could the tandem of Moroni and Matt equal the production and impact of Dennis and Andrew? Now, you and I talked about Moroni and Matt potentially, and that being Moroni, MLP, Matt Bushman, being equal to, we were talking about Chad Lewis and Atula Mealy back in the day, right? But Zach brings a more, you know, more recent tandem of BYU tight ends. The answer is yes, right? Isn't the answer?
Yeah, I mean, sure they could. Like, if everything lines up just right, sure.
What do you think the likelihood is, though?
I don't know.
I don't think
the likelihood is very high.
What year did those guys play together?
2006. 2006, 2007.
So let's see. BYU receiving that year. No, because that's Johnny Harlene. It's after that. Right?
2007 is Johnny Harlene, huh?
2006, 2007 are Harlene. I think it's what, 09? We're getting old, man. Can't remember this stuff. Yeah, Dennis Pitta. Andrew George. They combined in 2009 for 92 catches and 1,237 yards. 13 touchdowns. That's quite a year. Okay, I'm going to say that the likelihood of equaling those numbers aren't great.
I just haven't seen, like, well, you know, you've seen some flashes from both of them.
Bushman is capable of putting up a season like Pitta did. I mean, I don't think there's, to me, there's no doubt that he is capable of doing it. Now, he doesn't guarantee anything, but last year he had 29 catches for 511 yards, right? So his progression is pointed in that direction. The problem with Moroni is he has yet to do that. Part of that's been health related, right? But yep. To Zach's point, they're both highly talented, and I think this could be a big tandem and be very successful. So we'll see. We shall see. Good question, Mr. Coronado Zach. BYU, according to the Deseret News, they were quoting quarterbacks coach Aaron Roderick from, I think, spring practice, or maybe it was media day, about this quarterback, or quarterback I'm going to say, but I'm going to say a quote. You tell me who he's talking about. You ready?
I think I might have seen the interview, but go ahead.
Dang it. Spoiled by you actually following BYU.
Well, go for it. Let's see. Let's see if I can get it right.
He's a super athlete, Roderick said during media day. I don't want to overstate it, but he's one of the better athletes in our program. He's a guy who could start for us at other positions, but he's a good passer and a smart guy, and I really liked him in high school. So which quarterback is Roderick referring to?
I believe he's talking about Jaren Hall here.
He is not. He's talking about
Baylor. Who's he talking about?
Romney.
Oh, see, I saw an interview where he said some similar things about Jaren Hall.
He has
on KSL the other night.
Yeah, I don't know. He has said similar things about Jaren Hall. But this media day, this exact quote is about Baylor Romney. A friend of the podcast, Brandon Gurney's point is he could have been talking about Zach Wilson, could have been talking and has said similar things about Jaren Hall. What about soon-to-be Cougar Soljay Maiava, right, who's committed to the program, mm-hmm. or current walk-on Pleasant Grove grad Jake Jensen, who accepted a walk-on, I believe is headed on a mission. You know, all of these are – there's a pattern here, Matt, on the quarterbacks that this group is recruiting. They are all super athletic. Now, let's back up here. Almost every quarterback that makes it to Division I, play Division I football, or maybe all of them, could be considered super athletic. So maybe the better way to say this is guys with wheels who could play multiple positions at the Division I level. I mean, it's a clear pattern, right? So what does this mean? I mean, Tanner could have fit in this group too, by the way, before he got hurt. Before his last injury, that guy was not a great runner, but he could move around, and I bet with the right training and stuff, but maybe not. Maybe not. Do you think Tanner could have played another position at the D1 level?
No.
You do not. What about Zach?
I don't think so. Zach Wilson?
Yeah, he could play DB,
yeah.
Right? Could totally play DB or wide receiver, maybe.
Well, even go back before that. Go back to Taysom. Like, Taysom could have played probably any position on the field almost.
Tight end, a bunch of defensive positions from linebacker backwards.
He's probably not big enough to put his hand in the dirt. Maybe as a tight end in pass block, but not an interior lineman.
No, not an interior lineman.
But anywhere else.
Running back for sure.
Anyway.
We joked about that all the time, that he was the best running back on the team. Even when we had Jamal, right? So, you know, gosh, you had two good runners back then. That was fun. Anyway, it's just interesting, and Brandon makes some good points here that they're clearly the offense is going to be designed around, and they can do this because if Zach Wilson, and we are hoping he does not, and we wish him a long and happy career, but whoever replaces him is going to be a super athletic person, because that's how all the backups are, right? Romney, Hall, those are the most likely ones to get PT if he falls out, you know, if he gets injured. So they're going to design an offense where that they're going to play to that those strengths of the quarterback for sure. All right, last item for Cougars in the news: Jimmer is headed to Greece. This isn't really that newsworthy since the rumors of this. And then the signing happened, you know, several days before we recorded. But Matt, he's no longer the, what did they call him? The silent.
The lonely master.
The lonely master. Or is he still the lonely master, just relocated to Greece?
I think he's the lonely master, just relocated to Greece.
So is his chance of playing meaningful minutes in the NBA now zero, effectively?
Yeah, it's over.
It's over, right?
It's over. So yeah, he's 30 years old. It's over.
We should just stop. Stop worrying about it. Like his fans.
If Jimmer thought that he still had a shot at meaningful minutes in the NBA, he wouldn't have signed this contract when he did. He left summer ball early so that he could give some other guys a chance to try and make a roster, because when he figured out it was not going to happen for him.
Yeah, they weren't. This was a gimmick or a flyer, and he was hoping it was something else.
It wasn't going to go, and he knew that, so he signed the deal and he pulled out. And I think that Jimmer, you know, and I'm sure he's disappointed. I'm sure he obviously would have loved to have a career in the NBA, but but that's just not the way it worked out. But he knew that, and I think he knows that he signs this deal. I mean, how long is this deal? It's a $2 million deal, right?
Yeah, I forgot how long it is.
It's a couple of years.
Couple of years.
A 1 year deal. He's not coming back in his early 30s and making an NBA roster. It's way too competitive.
Well, yeah, we've
in
talked
the NBA to do that.
We've talked about that. There's, 40 good rookies, and good is, a relative term, right? But you get that first round of the draft plus a little bit into the second round of players every year that are fighting for roster spots. So you have to think about that every single year. There's 40 new guys for a fairly limited number of jobs in the NBA. And it's just, the longer he was out, is it impossible? Is it really zero? It's probably not really zero. It's probably something just north of zero. But it's effectively zero. Like, as a fan, I would just stop worrying about whether he'll play. You know, that's okay. That's okay. It doesn't take anything away from his collegiate career. Well, Matt, let's keep talking basketball, but let's wind the clock back before Jimmer Mania and go back to the last time BYU had, I would say, the undisputed national player of the year. And though Michael Smith, I think, might have won that too. But at a time when somebody captured the imagination of college basketball fans everywhere, and that's Danny Ainge.
Oh, Danny Ainge.
So let me start with the story, Matt. I worked at the Brick Oven. We've mentioned this several times on the podcast, and we served pizza to people. And famous members of the church came through the Brick Oven quite often, right? I served pizza to many journal authorities, is this a humble brag? No, this is just a brag, right?
You're also just laying out some
facts
to get to
facts,
get to
yes.
a story.
Steve Young.
This is background information.
Yeah, Steve Young, almost a bunch of Glenn Kozlowski. I was the only person in the restaurant that recognized Glenn Kozlowski. I was like, "That's Glenn Kozlowski," and everyone looked at me and said, "And who is he?" He had kind of longer hair. Somebody said, "Oh, is he like a rock star?" Sure. Yeah, he's a rock star. Anyway, one day,
a rock star.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. The hair wasn't even that long, man. I mean, I think I've had hair that long, but anyway, it was pretty funny. So I'm walking through the restaurant one day at work, and this fellow server, she comes up to me and she goes, "Man, so and so just gave me $20 to switch tables with him. What an idiot." And I said, "Switch tables with you?" She's like, yeah. He wanted to serve this big group that's in the back, and he gave me $20 out of his tips to switch tables. And I don't like doing big groups anyway. It was easy. And I said, "Well, why do you do that?" "Oh, because there's some guy named Danny Ainge back there."
Oh, my gosh. Danny Ainge?
Danny Ainge. And I was sitting there thinking, I would have given you 40.
She probably could have negotiated him up had she known, at least known not to pronounce it Ainge. Oh,
so
my goodness.
So she says to me, she had seen, the only reason she knew is that he had actually reserved the room, right? The big room,
right.
Brick Oven party area. And he, so his name was on a reservation. So she had seen it printed. And so then she asked me who Danny Ainge was. And I said, well, it's pronounced.
And you're like, that's not ringing a bell.
Ainge. And he's the best basketball player in the history of BYU. Now, the question is, Matt, is he still the best basketball player in the history of BYU? That was true when I said it in, you know, 1998 or whenever that was. But it's a
so
little.
So who's the competition at this point? Is it him or Jimmer?
Yeah, it's not Michael Smith. All due respect to Michael Smith, who had a terrific college career, right? But I think it's got to be Angie or Jimmer.
You're gonna keep saying it.
Fredette.
Some guy Fredette.
Fredette and Angie showed up in the building. People are awesome. You know, and stats are hard to compare because there was no 3-point line when Ainge played, right? There weren't any advanced stats. So you're really doing this. And the other part is you and I did not see Danny Ainge's career from 77 to 81. I remember Danny Ainge when I was a kid as a member of the Celtics and then a couple other NBA teams. But I never saw him play in college, right? We're going to discuss a team here in a few minutes that predates both of us time as sports fans. But maybe we don't have to answer that question today. But the point is, he was, you know, and then ended up becoming a draft pick in two sports, right? He was a phenomenal college basketball player.
And phenomenal athlete.
Phenomenal athlete. And his first year, as a freshman, he averaged 21 points, 6 boards, and 5 assists a game. As a freshman, right? So I look at him, and he had 4 amazing years, opposed to Jimmer that was more maybe 2.5 amazing years. I don't know if you have to settle the debate, Matt, but the point is, if anybody says to you that Jimmer is easily the best basketball player in BYU history, I think Danny Ainge and probably Kresimir Kosic need to raise their hands and be like, excuse me, you may want to talk about us, right? So we're going to talk about Ainge here today. Expectations coming into this season, Matt. If you look at the season before, they were quite good in 79-80. Ainge's stats came down his sophomore and junior year, not because he played worse, but because of they had another really good player by the name of, do you know?
I don't know.
Oh, come on. Pull up. Where's your Wikipedia knowledge? Devin Durant.
Oh, that's right. That was Devin Durant.
Yeah, Devin Durant. And obviously they had Fred Roberts, who was on that 80-81 team as well. So you're looking at...
Right, but Fred was a year behind Danny.
Yeah. And Fred and him didn't play the same, you know, they weren't wing
right, they weren't competing
players,
for minutes.
Right? And they weren't competing for shots because their shots came differently. So the year before, in 1979-1980 season, BYU had a really good year, 24-5, only one loss in the WAC. They were a number 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. And then they were upset in the second round by Clemson. So this was a team that was already really good, right? And the year before that, they were 20-8, won the WAC, and were a number 5 seed. You look at this, quite frankly, it's one of the best runs in BYU sports history. Not just
well,
basketball.
And we've talked about this. We've talked about this in other sports too, right? Is that typically, a magical season is preceded by one or two very good seasons, right? And when you look in the mid to late 70s, right, the team was not good. And then they show up in that 78-79 season, and all of a sudden they win 20 games. And you know, and that talks to some of these guys, you know, the Devin Durants and some of these other things that were going on with the program. And then the 79-80 season, you know, they get up and they win 24 games. And I'd argue that 24-game season, 13-1 conference record, that's a magical year.
They had a great season. And you know, they had, as you pointed out, before that year, they'd had a stretch of, what is it, 6 years, 7 years without making the tournament.
Well, they weren't even winning 15 games.
Yeah, they were losing seasons. And this was after, you know, an era in the 50s, 60s, and even the early 70s, where they were consistently pretty good, you know, a little bit up and down in the 60s. But, you know, this was a great stretch run between 78 and 81. Frank Arnold did a great job coaching these guys. And in the 79-80 season and the 80-81 season, they were ranked the whole year, both years. So expectations were there. If anything, the expectations, the regular season, and we'll get to this here in a second, probably did not match expectations because of a few losses. So let's talk about some moments that mattered in this season. The first thing is the games against Utah. So Utah was also really good this year. A guy by the name of Tom Chambers that folks may have heard of that went on to play for the Phoenix Suns and have a good NBA career. But he was an amazing college basketball player. So they played Utah twice. And you look at this and you say, let me see, I'm getting to the schedule here. Schedule. They had their first game at Utah. Utah was ranked ninth at the time, and it was a tough, tough loss in that particular case by what, 4 points? Am I getting that right? 4 points, yeah, 60-56. BYU would then come back and win and beat them the last game of the regular season. And it says here in the schedule, neutral court. I don't know why it was a neutral court. I couldn't find that on the internet. There may be some listener will be able to help me. But then BYU comes back and destroys them. Utah still ranked number ninth in the country, 95-76, to finish the season. But BYU loses four games in conference and finishes third in the WAC. This was a regular season that was a bit of a disappointment. So you look at that, I mean, losses. The Wyoming was a good team that year, but lost to Wyoming. Lost to Utah, lost to UTEP, who was decent. One of the things that actually makes this one of the loss to San Diego State, one of the best teams in BYU sports history, is the conference was pretty good that year. And the only loss that's kind of inexplicable is the one against San Diego State on the road. San Diego State wasn't particularly good, but, you know, Wyoming.
But Utah was good.
Utah was really good.
And to come back at the end of the season and get that loss back, I think was a big deal.
Oh, yeah. Huge deal. And the Wyoming battles that year were pretty epic. BYU won the first one by 14, but it was close for a lot of the game. And then BYU lost by two.
This is a close one on the road, right?
War Memorial Fieldhouse. Again, against a good Wyoming team, they were 24-6 that year and were a 5 seed in the tournament. Think about this for a second. The WAC in 1980-81 had three teams ranked at the going into the NCAA tournament. All right? And
that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And had three teams, those three teams go into the NCAA tournament, all with six or higher seeds, right? So it was a really good year. And that makes it more special, right? Because you weren't beating up nobody, though they played. The WAC did have some terrible teams that year. But the next thing, you go into the conference, NCAA tournament, and you're a sixth seed, and you go in, and basically it's kind of like, okay, they're going to win one game again. They're going to beat Princeton, which they did 60-51 in And let's talk about that game for just a second. Ainge has 21 points and 5 assists. Roberts is Roberts-like self, 19-7. But they looked fine against Princeton. Princeton was a pretty good team. But I think at this point, back in the time, and I've read some stories about this, it was pretty much kind of a given, like, well, they're going to lose this next game against UCLA. So let's talk about the UCLA game for a second, Matt. BYU ends up destroying them and owning the game from beginning to end. They're up by 9 at halftime, end up winning 78-55. UCLA was the number 3 seed in that region and had a really good team. Ainge, this is stuff of legend, 37 points, 4 boards, 4 assists, and three steals. Can you imagine what would happen if a BYU team, the hype that would be going on if a BYU team was a sixth seed, beat the third seed, and had a game like this?
Well, and Ainge is, you know, he shoots 64% from the floor?
Yeah, 14 to 22.
You know, and basically plays every minute of the game. You know, this is a phenomenal performance. The hype machine around this, if this happens today, like this is like Gemmer Mania on
steroids.
I don't know, maybe it's, yeah, or maybe it's the same. I don't know. But the expectation meter is now pinned.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
When you come out and you just dismantle this team this way and have such a dominating performance from your star.
Well, and they held defensively, and that's one of the things about this team is they were very good defensively. They held UCLA to less than 35% shooting. You know, and then Fred Roberts, 17 points and 7 boards again, and Don's favorite player of all time, Greg Kite, who Don somehow, I think, thinks that Greg Kite's better or something. I don't know. He always gets on me about Greg Kite whenever we have discussions about this era of basketball, and I love Greg Kite. He's not better than Fred Roberts. But 12 and 11 and 4 blocks from Greg Kite. But here's the nice trivia question, and I know you're looking at the same box score. I was floored as I was exploring this season, the number of minutes the starters played. Ainge, 39 minutes. Roberts, 38. Now, keep in mind, they're winning. It's not a total blowout, but it ends up being a blowout, right? But in the second half, it wasn't a blowout the whole way, but 39, 38, Kite, 37 minutes, Steve Craig, 36 minutes, Steve Trumbo, 31 minutes. The only person off the bench to play any meaningful minutes was Timo Saarelainen, who played 11.
Well, and if the other thing that really blows my mind is this. Not a single point off the bench.
Not a single point off the bench.
So they got all 78 of those points out of their starters. And I think that the message here, you know, it talks to depth, right?
And a lack of
foul trouble. These guys and you couldn't take your foot off the gas.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and a lack of foul trouble, right? They didn't get in foul trouble, which would come into play against them in the next game. So the biggest moment that mattered was the infamous game against number 2 seed Notre Dame. And Notre Dame seemed to be cruising, held BYU to 18 points in the first half, 28-18, ugly first half of basketball from a scoring standpoint. BYU ends up getting outshot in the game, percentage-wise, 55-44, but BYU ends up with a bunch more shots, which came into play because of some offensive rebounds and that type of stuff. But Ainge did not have a legendary game in this game, right, until the end. So he finishes.
Right,
He had a legendary moment. But he has 12 points and 3 assists and 1 rebound. Fred Roberts and Steve Craig both foul out. So we got Greg Kite had foul trouble. So you end up getting Craig Bailiff and Timo end up playing more minutes. And Greg Bailiff, who didn't play any meaningful minutes in the previous game, scores 10 points on 3 of 6 shooting and 4 of 5 from the foul line. But the iconic, I mean, you think about this score, Matt, 51 to 50. Yuck.
What a snoozer, huh?
Right?
Like it's got to be, people are falling asleep in the stand.
And think of on the other side of the ball, you have a bunch of future NBA players. Off the bench, Joe Klein, who ended up having a ho-hum career in the NBA. But you had Orlando Woolridge, John Paxson, and Kelly Trapuka on that Notre Dame team. They were loaded with talent. And obviously the moment that mattered was Ainge's drive across the court. So, Matt, in modern basketball, there's no way Ainge can pull that off, right? Somebody steps in his way. Like every time I watch this, well, you can't foul him. They were in the bonus, and he's a 90% free throw shooter. You're up by 1.
I don't know. It's a foul fest at end of games in basketball right now. Everybody, no, you get not, a foul. No, you get a foul.
Not if you're up by 1. You don't foul anybody when you're up by 1, right? But the point being is that somebody had to step in his way and make it a little hard. But I just watched it again a couple times over the last few days, and it's like, you know, it's just he's faster than most of the guys on the floor, so that helped. And then I just thought, I think they all thought he was going to pull up and shoot a jumper. I think they either lost track of time just watching the body language, or they lost track of time or just thought he's going to pull up. And he has not had a good game. He was 3 of 9 shooting coming into that.
Right.
And you say, what an amazing thing. So anyway, so they beat a 3 seed and a 2 seed, and then they get the last moment that matters, of course, was the game against Virginia. Close game for a lot of it. BYU ends up falling by 14, but they led by 3 at half. Ralph Sampson, might have heard of him. He was tall. 22 points, 12 boards, and 4 blocks.
He was tall.
He was very tall. Ainge, again, not his best game, 4 of 13, faced some really good defenders on the Virginia side of the ball. 13 points, 5 assists, 3 boards. Roberts had a good game, 12, 7, and 5. But, Matt, they just ran out of gas here against a really good Virginia team. After beating a really good Notre Dame team and a pretty good who did they beat before that? UCLA team. So they just ran out of gas. But you look at this and you're like, wow. And so the 3 players that mattered this season, well, obviously we've talked about Ainge. Ainge is the player that mattered the most. Fred Roberts averaged 18, almost 19 points a game, 8 boards, and 3.5 assists. You know, he was probably, I don't remember him, obviously, as a BYU player, but he was a good backup in the NBA, and he could pass, and he could rebound, and had a little bit of an offensive game, but he was a player that mattered. Matt, who's the other player? Looking at the stats, looking at some of those important games at the end, who do you put as that third banana?
I think it's got to be Greg Kite.
Oh, I mean, stop it. It's Trumbo. Are you serious? Affected by her brother.
No, come on, man.
10-10 and 2.5 assists a game. The guy averaged a double-double. Trumbo did. But Kite was pretty good.
Kite was pretty good. I mean, you know, you're looking at what?
Kite was a sophomore.
You know, but he's getting steals,
blocks,
points. I mean, he's producing a lot of stuff for you. Over and when you look at like minutes played, and you go into these last 3 games that we just talked about, I mean, he's playing more minutes. I don't know. I think you can argue it both ways there. I mean, if you look straight at points, if you look just straight at point contribution, I think you're probably right. But
well, Kite was besides offensive rebounding, he was kind of a hole offensively, right? You weren't in place for him. It wasn't like Trumbo or Roberts where, you know, you were going to give them the ball in the post, right? Kite got it there sometimes, but Kite's value came in all the other things in the box score that you just talked about. Blocks, steals. He was a really, really good defender, and you can't see that on a stat sheet, right? But if you look at, I mean, the guy had to, in back-to-back games, was guarding Orlando Woolridge and Ralph Sampson. Right? Like, he's playing against 2 elite college big men. And he was, he and Roberts both ended up playing defense against those guys. But Kite was a really good defender, which that defense rebounding thing got him in the NBA, despite his lack of you know, really good offensive talent. But, I mean, either way.
Well, but then you look at some of these big games. Like if I look at the UCLA game, right, and I look at contribution in that big win, I think Greg Kite played a more important role there. I mean, he scored 12 points. You know, he played a few more minutes. He was shot 57% off from the floor. You know, had 11 boards to Trumbo's 13, but, you know, had 3 times as many points and 4 blocks, right? And you know, what may have been the biggest game of the season, right? Because you don't get that Notre Dame special without beating that, without coming out after, you know, with this underdog win against UCLA.
Well, what's funny so to me, you're right. I think you could definitely make an argument, and Don is making it right now, yelling at his phone.
He'll be texting us in the morning.
Yeah, he'll be texting us. Have we told that to everybody, that he lives texts us?
I'm sure we've mentioned this before. Mentioned it. It's one of the greatest parts of my week.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, that Notre Dame game, as I rewatched some highlights and looked at the box score, just reminds me, there seems to be a game like this every NCAA tournament in the first or second round, an upset. And maybe even sometimes in the Sweet 16. When you watch the game, you think to yourself, after it ended, the other team should have won, right?
Yep.
I don't understand. Their best player, Danny Ainge, doesn't have a great game. You hold them to 40-something percent shooting when they were a really good offensive team that year, right? If you're Notre Dame, you think you're going to win that game. And they had, if they had just been able to stop Ainge from shooting a layup to win it, right? So it's one of those games. I think the UCLA game, because it doesn't have a moment, that's the one that's more impressive, right?
You beat a team that was better than you on paper and was expected to beat you. You beat them like a drum.
Yeah. You controlled the game. And I maybe Frank Arnold was trying to make a point, but leaving your five starters out there the whole time.
Yeah, but you know what? This game is a little bit of an anomaly, but if you look at the other games in that tournament that year, it was not uncommon for minute spreads like the ones that we're showing.
No.
But in UCLA's case, that UCLA team had a different kind of depth. You know, they had two or three guys they could bring off of the bench and expect to contribute, and they got they really did not get much help off of the bench. And I think that's what really fell apart for UCLA.
Well, and they had some poor performances that day, probably due at least somewhat to the BYU's defense, but they did not have a good offensive game, right? They shot less than 35% from the floor. It also, just looking at the highlights and also looking at the stat sheet here, you know what also just blows me away? It's the effect of the three-point shot. Danny Ainge ends up being a pretty good three-point shooter at the pro at level, right? So you think for a second, and, you know, you can't go back in every game because the UCLA players would have the same advantage. But think of here for a second. This guy was a good outside shooter. And what happens? You know, he doesn't get to shoot free throws. I mean, three pointers. And I just said, what would that have looked like?
I mean, put up 37 points in that UCLA game. Can you imagine what he would have done with a 3-point line?
I mean, that's the thing between him and Jimmer, right? That's why looking at their stats is a little off. But if you look at his pro career, he shot 38% from the NBA 3-point line for his career, had a couple of seasons over 40%. So you just take a portion of his shots, make him 40% three-pointers, to be conservative, and you're going to add 4, 5, 6 points a season to his averages, right? I don't know. It's interesting because you watch those early 80s college basketball games, late 70s, and watch some of those highlights, and it feels like a different game, you know? But we say the same thing about football, right? The tearaway jerseys, the linemen that seem too small, you know, and the games change and they evolve, but it's pretty awesome. But let's go back to Danny Ainge in this season, Matt, which is just an amazing season. You know, WAC Player of the Year, Wooden Award, consensus All-American when those teams seem to mean something. There's no doubt that at that point in 1981, he was probably the most recognized athlete in BYU sports history.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, some football players would probably eclipse him in short order. But you think about 1981, what was going down, Matt. There was a really good quarterback who played at BYU. in it, around that time, a couple of them. This was a great time to be a BYU sports fan. The late 70s, early 80s. The basketball team was on the national stage. The football team was bursting their way onto the national stage. And they wore sometimes powder blue. I mean, I'm not sure what could... That's it, right?
It was a magical time.
All right, so...
You were nationally relevant all the time.
You were nationally relevant all the time. You had, over the course of several years, some of the best players in college sports. Right? Between McMahon, him, Mark Wilson, Steve Young. That early 80s stretch, Durant was a heck of a basketball player, right? It wasn't on that 80-81 team. I believe he was on a mission, right? I'd have to look it up. You can probably see it on his bio. You can find that somewhere.
I had a device at my fingertips where I could look these types of things up.
Only a website that had his current life situation. I don't know. He gives good talks. So let's look at what they might have been listening to in the locker room.
Matt? So this is the 80-81 season.
80-81 season. So you probably got to go to the best songs of 1980, really, right? You got to do the best songs of 1980. You can't do 81.
Yeah. I'm with you.
You're going to get ahead of yourself. No, you have to do 1980, not 81, okay? Are you listening?
Yeah, that's what you just – isn't that what you just said?
No, are you listening to me? No, I'm just being obnoxious. All right. So, Matt, do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
Why don't you go first? Because I'm going to have a little bit of some technical difficulty pulling this one off right now.
Of course you are. Of course you are. So this is one that I think everybody was listening to in 1981. I think it's a great song, and it also plays into one of my favorite movies of all time and what we would call one of the all-time great that's 81. I'm looking at the wrong list. You're killing me, Smalls. All right, never mind. I was about to do an endless... Oh, I'm playing it anyway. Maybe this came out in early 1981. But I set up this whole endless love thing. People listen to Endless Love together, alone.
Friends listen to Endless Love in the dark.
In the dark, sure they do. All right, Matt, you're up. Why don't you just sing it?
So I can't get it to play because I'm recording off of my phone and my AirPods.
Well, what do you want me to play?
Funky Town.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. Funky Town. Here we go. This is great radio right here.
This is very exciting.
Now my phone won't load. Apple Music is like, I'm just getting the circle of death. Searching. All right, just sing it, man. Let's hear your... Nice.
That's all you're going to get out of me.
Rock and... Okay. All right, here we go. Here's my next one. What's the matter with the clothes I'm wearing? Can't you tell that your tie's too wide? Maybe I should buy some old tab collars. Welcome back to the age of jive. Wear a Cuban hat out lately, honey. You can't dress trash until you spend a lot of money. Little Billy Joel. I'm sure they were listening to Billy Joel. Billy Joel was the coolest. All right, you got another one for us?
I'm still working on my technical issue.
Well, why don't you text it to me, Slick?
I think I just fixed it. Hold on.
Use your technology. If we're supposed to be hearing something, we can't.
It's a little Tom Petty. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Oh, love
Don't
Tom Petty.
Don't do me like that.
I love Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Let's do one more. You have one more or are we done?
I got one more that actually was a pretty popular song. I don't know if this one actually shows up in the locker room or not.
All right.
But we'll go with this one.
Fire away, buddy. A little Queen.
This is like one of the, this is a top 10 song.
Oh, yeah. I bet you that
this
played.
This song was actually the, this was the number one song on the radio the week I was born.
Oh, really?
That might not actually be true. It was something by Queen.
You just made it up. You just said stuff.
87% of all statistics are just made up on the spot.
That's right. Actually, it's 78.4. But how about YMCA was a top 10 song the year before? Do you think that
there
was
you go.
Being played? I don't know. I don't know if that was being played. Oh, and then old Rod Stewart the year before. If you think I'm sexy. Do you think that was being played in the locker room?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Reunited and it feels so good. Oh, yeah. Great songs. And, yeah, you were born with some good songs surrounding you there, buddy.
I brought a lot of great music into the world with me, so.
I wouldn't have said it that way. Oh,
hey.
Actually, here's the song that they were playing in the locker room. I found
it. I've got whatever you have, I have a better one.
No, you don't. You don't.
Oh, I do. Go ahead.
You don't. You don't have a
Go
bad
ahead.
One.
Go ahead.
All right. Here is a song from 1979 that was still probably playing frequently in locker rooms. Little Barbara Streisand and Neil Diamond. This is get you psyched for a game, don't you think?
That's great. That's great.
All right, what do you got? Do you have a serious one or another joke one?
No, I think I've got a really good one. Right. I can't get it to pull up, so I've just texted it to you because I don't want to ruin the suspense. You have to play it now. You have to play it. I can't get it to load.
it's a loading here. All right, here we go. Too long of an intro.
You gotta get through it, yeah. You're really singing along to Eric so right now.
Yeah, I'm harmonizing for heaven's sakes.
This is amazing. This is amazing. You just made my whole week right there.
All out of love? Are you kidding
along
me?
With Air Supply.
I'm all out of love.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is I look at this list, right? So I pulled up this probably the same thing as you, the top 100 songs from this. See, there's nothing in here that I would listen to and be like, yes, this gets me excited to do sports.
What about?
There's not a single one of these.
No,
what is
there
this?
Isn't. There isn't. What about Lost I Will Survive?
Air Supply's on here like five times.
What about I Will Survive? That was 1979.
Maybe, but that one, no, you listen to the cake version of that now.
Yeah, yeah, but not the
And
Gloria,
there's a cuss word in it, right?
Gloria
so
Gaynor.
It just totally changes it.
Man, yeah, this is not like 19...
Ladies Night by Kool & the Gang? This is not 1986, 1995. Like, this is not...
No.
You know, there's no Survivor. Like, this is pre Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah, that's true. You have to really dig deep. I mean... Some of the other songs in 1979 were Shake Your Groove Thing, Peaches and Herb. Oh my gosh. This, never mind.
One Fine Day by Carole King.
Yeah, this was not the best time. Well, anyway,
there's some group called Peaches and Herb in here. What is this?
Yeah. Well, let's finish up, Matt. We have a game to play. All right. The game this week is More or Less, and it's from Eric on Twitter. That's Eric on Twitter. He says, answer, and we'll finish with this. Answer these, which will be higher? So I call this game More or Less. All right. And it's basically almost all about the Utah game.
All right.
Utah game, BYU passing yards or BYU rushing yards? Which will be higher?
Utah game, passing yards or passing yards?
Passing yards will be higher. Scoring margin, BYU or BYU wins for the entire season? Wins for the season. It's going to be super close.
So this is the scoring margin of BYU versus Utah?
Correct. Or BYU wins for the season?
BYU scoring margin is bigger.
Okay. All right. Rushing total versus Utah.
That's a really good one. That's a fun one. You could have a whole 15-minute conversation.
Oh, yeah, you totally could.
That's a great question.
Lapini Katoa, Tyson Williams, or Emmanuel Escupa, who has the highest rushing total versus Utah? Katoa.
Tyson.
Yeah, it's Katoa. It's not even.
All right, we'll see.
It's Katoa. BYU wins. Or number of players? I don't get that one, Eric. Do you understand what he's saying?
BYU wins or number players? What am I missing here? I'm looking at the way you've pasted this into the agenda.
Yeah, maybe I need to go back
Did
to
the you have a copy-paste issue?
You have a copy-paste issue. Sake. Your face. Oh.
What are you, new? Welcome to the internet.
No, it says BYU wins or number of players with honor code office problems. BYU wins.
Yeah, BYU wins.
Come on.
Come on, that number is always just like one or two.
Plus, they're gonna. I heard a rumor they're disbanding the honor code office.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't hear that rumor. I just made it up right now.
Well, yeah, sure. Anything can be a rumor.
Yeah, I just started it. I just started the rumor.
It's great.
Copyright hashtag Adam makes up stuff. Did I just
hashtag
say copyright Adam hashtag?
I don't hashtag think Adam sings air supply.
I'm all out of love.
Oh,
I'm so lost,
man.
Without you.
Yes. Do you know who loves Air Supply?
Don?
Yes! That
Don
is
loves
exactly
Air Supply.
Who.
He actually, you know what? His favorite Air Supply is a cover band that's all in Klingon. I mean, you haven't heard Air Supply until you've heard it in the proper Klingon.
Yeah, you want to hear, ballads, love ballads? You should hear the Klingon sing about their love.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Oh, there's it's nothing beautiful. Like it.
Yeah, it's nothing like it in the world. Well, I don't know how we can get any higher than that, Matt. So I thank everybody for listening tonight. I think we're going to be back next week. We'll kind of figure that out as we go along. If you are interested in emailing the show, of course, you can do that, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Or you can join the conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout. Thanks for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!
When are you going to harmonize to Air Supply?
Never in my life.
Right now you can. I'm playing the song for the outro. So
I'm good.
All right. Big baby.
It's just making me, like, contemplative, you know?
That's right.
Deep.
Super deep.
He's all out of love. I mean, he's so lost without her.
Yeah.
Times when my life seems so low, it would make me believe